Last hour of the week, clone. Step it up. Make it count. Make it good. Go into the weekend strong. You'll feel better about it. Whatever you do this afternoon, you will feel much better about doing that if you end this week strongly. 1-800-636-8686. I'm Jim Rome. You're in the jungle. The program is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Rocket Mortgage is with you every step of the way to provide a seamless mortgage experience. It's going to be a great, great hour on this end. A New York legend, God Sham God, joins me next segment. God, this guy's backstory is amazing. There are a lot of guys in the NBA right now that really look up to him, admire him. He's had a really colorful basketball life. God Sham God coming up next segment. Phone lines are open. Bottom of the hour, Alvy's week that was. Also, we're on a heater. We're on a heater, but the wrong kind of heater. The last four calls to the program have been run. Larry, Rex, Liz, and Jason. That's four for you all. So I'm hoping to snap that streak. But if you're one of those people keeping track of those things, four in a row over the course of the first 2 hours were a run. You can follow me on Twitter. I can't do anything about that. You can do whatever you want on Twitter. I've never blocked anybody on Twitter. Do whatever the hell you want on Twitter. Or email me, like this guy. Dear Jim, the application looks good. The application feels good. I like our chances. Regards, Hefty. Paul in Louisville.
Of course, looks good. My
thoughts for the field. Again, Hefty said he did nothing wrong. He worked with Rick Singer to help get his kids into college, but did not do anything wrong. Obviously, and was shocked when he heard it. Why do I think that he wasn't shocked when he heard that? Yeah, I'm not saying that you're lying, Phil. I'm just saying, why would I think that I was not shocked, or Hefty was not shocked when he heard that? Hey, Rome, that pathetic, sad little boo was actually Eric in Orlando hearing the reaction to his call yesterday. Matt in Vancouver. Eric, hold up, Alvin. Eric in Orlando is the guy known for dropping the flight deck gloss on James Kelly. So you can go about that any number of ways. If he walks off on that, he's a legend. Even if he doesn't walk off on that and continues to chase it to try to get that feeling back again, I'm still going to allow it because it set up one of the great glosses in show history. In other words, if you're going to come in and you're credited with that gloss, and then you come in and you take a run at the guy who might be more hated than anybody on this show right now, Matt in L.A., and it all goes against you, you made a really regrettable phone call. And if you missed it, it sounded like this.
I don't fish on boats, okay, Matt? I fish on a boat.
Let me stop right there. Hey, Matt. I don't fish on boats, bro. I do not fish on boats, bro. I fish on boats. What?
I don't fish on boats, okay, Matt? I fish on a boat.
I love that. I don't fish on boats. I mean, like, with disdain. Like, put some respect on it, jerk. Boats. Man, I don't fish on boats. Why don't you wake the hell up, man? I don't fish on boats. I fish on a boat. And also remember, Eric, you're still my dude. Even if I'm the only one who has your back now. He did start that call by saying, hey, Rome, remember when Matt in L.A. took a run at me right after the Super Bowl? And my response was no. No, Eric. I don't remember all of Matt's calls. He calls like five times a week. He clearly did, though. My man Eric had been sitting on that call for 6 weeks before he finally showed up and name-checked the yacht that he's been going on lately, mentioned the magazine that it was in, which we looked up. It's a nice boat. But it's still a boat, Matt. Marlin Magazine. So that's what Matt in Vancouver's talking about. That jump today.
Speaking in Marlin Magazine in 2018.
Got that? Marlin Magazine, 2018. So that's what we're talking about there. All right, as I mentioned, I've had four calls in a row that have been run. Hey, Nut, Stucknut, bro. What is the record for most consecutive calls run on this show? I don't know the answer to that, but I bet you do. Right now, we're sitting on four. What is the record, the all-time jungle record for consecutive phone calls that got run? You look that up, Nut. In the meantime, we go back to the phones. I know this guy's not going to extend the streak. That's why I'm going to go to him. I want to end the streak. Casey in Pensacola. Casey, what's going on? Casey, you're on the air. Go ahead. Okay, that makes five.
No. You don't like that color.
I don't like that color.
That makes five. 1-800-636-8686. Casey, that was one of your better calls, actually. All right, so that's five calls that have been run. Oh, wait a minute. He's there. Are we having problems with the phones again? Well, anyway, let's try it again. That's five in a row. Casey is looking to snap the streak. Casey, you're on the air. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, Romy?
What's up?
Hey, I have a question for you about this Felicity Huffman-Lori Loughlin scandal. How come they couldn't get their kids into school the old-fashioned way like Forrest Gump's mom did by banging the principal?
And that makes six.
You don't like that call.
I don't like that call.
Hey, Casey, you just set a jungle record. You got run twice in 30 seconds. Nobody's ever done that before. Why didn't they just, quote, bang the principal? I don't know, because she wanted to spend 500 grand instead. I don't know. I don't care, Casey. That makes six. And by the way, you're five and six, Casey. It's a wild story. Again, the guy must, if Hefty's telling the truth, then Singer was doing some legitimate business. If Hefty is telling the truth, and according to Hefty, obviously, we would never do that. Quote, and is there anything more baggy than Hefty going, our kids would disown us? Bro, if they would disown you over bag-like activity, they'd be out on their own a long time ago. I would never do that. I'm Hefty. I'm above reproach. I've never done anything like that. My kids would disown me. Either that or thank you. But some of these kids didn't know. We got into this earlier this week. Some of these kids literally were taking tests in bogus testing centers with proctors, and they didn't even know. And then their scores would come back, and they'd go up like 300 or 400 points on the SAT. I'm like, damn, that was easy. I guess I had to just take it once to get used to it. I think I'll take it again. And the parents are like, no, don't do that. Don't do that. Because when you take it again, and it's not proctored by some scumbag, then you go back to where you were to begin with. All right, I'm not going to risk another call here to extend that streak, I don't think. Let me make a bold statement instead. They pay me to put myself out there. So that's exactly what I'm going to do. Put my neck on the line, put it out there, and stand by it. Roll tape on this, because I'm going to go there. This is going to come flying right out of my mouth. Ready? The Pittsburgh Steelers are jacked up. Yeah, I said it. Yeah, I went there. How you like me now? Not a lot of other people would be willing to put their name on a line like that and say it, but that's my job. I got to call it the way I see it. And the way I see it is the Steelers are jacked up. And they look and they sound nothing like the Steelers we've always known. And it continued again yesterday. There's more. Former tight end Jesse James piled on. James signed with the Detroit Lions. And at his press conference, he said that he was, quote, glad to get away, end quote, from the drama of Pittsburgh. Think about that for a second. And no, I'm not asking you to come in here and crack the city of Detroit by saying that somebody actually wanted to go there. That's not what this is about. Ever think you would see the day where any guy would be so hyped to leave the Steelers to play for the Lions? And the reason for wanting to do so is to get away from all the drama with the Steelers. I mean, yeah, it's probably got something to do with the fact that he got paid. That probably has something to do with it, but it's still an incredible statement. This guy was hyped to leave the Steelers to join the Lions. When has anybody ever said that? When has anybody ever been geeked to leave the Steelers to become a Detroit Lion? The guy would rather be a Lion than a Steeler. I didn't think I would ever hear anybody ever say that. It's incredible. Almost as incredible as the statements from a pair of former Steelers to Sports Illustrated regarding Ben Roethlisberger. It started with a former Steeler, Josh Harris. You probably don't know who that is, but he did play for the Steelers, and he claimed on Twitter that Roethlisberger intentionally fumbled a ball at the end of a game in 2014 to protest a play call that he didn't like. Here's the tweet, quote, 2014, week 17, we were playing the Bengals. Todd Haley called a run play with little time left in the game. Ben wanted to kneel. He rolled his eyes in the huddle. He then purposely fumbles the ball. I had to recover it. At that moment, I knew what kind of person he was. That is some story. Look, I don't know if that's true or not, but the fact that it's even a suggestion is insane. And you got to work pretty hard to make something like that up, right? I mean, that it might carry more weight if it was coming from a guy you'd actually heard of. It might carry more weight if it was coming from a vet with the Steelers. But just because you don't know this guy doesn't mean that it's not true. I don't know if it is or isn't. I just know that the suggestion that a Hall of Fame quarterback intentionally fumbled the ball because he was pissed about a play call is amazing. And amazing as in freaking horrible. Harris also told Robert Klemko, friend of this program, quote, Ben is a great player, but he doesn't try to connect with teammates. During my time there, I had conversations with vets like Heath Miller, William Gay, Cam Hayward, Darius Hayward-Bey, Will Allen, Ike Taylor, Troy Polamalu, Bruce Gronkowski, even James Harrison, but never Ben. Troy made an effort to talk to guys, not Ben, though, and it was like that for others, too. End quote. So Harris would probably be the first one to tell you that he's not a household name and that he only played one NFL season and it was with Pittsburgh. I'm sure he would say that. But it does tell you something that the guy only played 1 year and all these other vets were looking to connect with somebody like that. Quote, even James Harrison, but never Ben. End quote. Harris went on to say, quote, he is close with the O-line and maybe a few guys here and there, but for the most part, he stays to himself. During practice, when the team would be warming up, a lot of times he'd be sitting on the water coolers reading the newspapers. So when Ben is critical of players publicly without having a relationship with them, it can rub them the wrong way because they don't know if it is out of love or what. And when you call out all pro guys, that definitely does not sit well with them. Yeah, I can see that too. I can see where that might piss guys off. Ben's right when he says he's been there long enough to call guys out, but he shouldn't be doing it publicly. And especially if he himself has never put in the time to connect with and get respect from the guys that he's currently roasting publicly. And there's more. That's not even the entire take. There's more damning evidence there that looks bad for Ben. I don't know. Look, you find me another great quarterback that does that. Find me another great quarterback that lights guys up publicly. Like in the media. Tom Brady, Drew Brees. They don't do that. And all of a sudden now you've got guys who, some guys who don't want to play with Ben. I've never heard anybody say, yeah, I don't want to play with Tom Brady. I don't want to play with Drew Brees. But Ben airs guys out publicly. Really good players. And to the detriment of the team. Guys are supposed to want to play with the all-time greats, not get away from them. Guys can't wait to play with Brady and Breeze. But in this case, it sounds like some guys can't wait to get away from Ben. All right, when we come back, I want to finish that thought, but I want to talk to God Sham God. Legendary figure in the game. Legendary New York baller. God Sham God coming up next. And we are sitting on 5 run calls or 6 now. Make it 6. And Stucknut says that is a jungle record. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Welcome back. I'm Jim Rome. And as I mentioned, I've been looking forward to this conversation. If you're on hold, hang in. I've got time on the back end for phone calls. But we are joined right now by a New York legend. A basketball legend. He played at LaSalle Academy, Providence College. He is currently an assistant with the Dallas Mavericks. My guest is God Sham God. God, great to have you on the show. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Man, I'm great.
Having me on the show.
It is so good to have you on the show. Listen, there's so many things I want to talk to you about, but why don't we start first with New York? You grew up playing basketball in New York. What is the New York basketball mentality and mindset? What's it take to be successful there?
I mean, it just takes being ultra-competitive because, you know, everybody's competitive in New York. I don't care if you play basketball, if you rap, if you're in the business world, you know, the street guy thinks he's better than the professional guy. And, of course, the professional guy thinks he's better than everybody because, in his mind, he made it. you know, he made a career out of it and he's making money from it. So automatically he thinks he's better than the street guy. But the street guy, you know, he works hard too. And everything is just ultra competitive. Everybody's an alpha male when you're coming from New York. And I think that's the kind of rap that we have gotten since I've been in middle school to when I used to go to camps like Five Star or ABCD camp, like the All-American camp. They always be like, oh, the New York guys always think, you know, they're in charge of everything and things like that. So it's just a habit. I mean, coming from New York, everything is just so competitive.
Got Jam Guy joining us. That's how it was. You guys did run things back in the day in New York. Like, you came up in a golden era for point guards in New York. We're talking about Stephon Marbury, Rafer Alston, Ed Cota, and more. What were the battles like back in the day when you represented yourself in your borough?
I mean, it was great because, you know, every borough have different styles. You know, I was blessed to be born in Brooklyn but raised in Harlem, so I had a combination of styles and things like that. And, you know, just playing against Stephon Marbury growing up, which, you know, is a great friend of mine, you know, whether it was Kareem Reed, Rafer Alston, Ed Cota, you know, Shaheem Holloway, you know, more so you growing up, like, most of the times, the guys that you're competing against is your friends, so most of it is like bragging. Like, I played on the team with Rafer and AAU. Of course, me and Stephon Marbury played in AAU together. Me and Shaheem Holloway played together in AAU. So, you know, it's just more about just repping yourself and repping your barrel and just going out there, just trying to be the best you can be at any given time and things like that. And even though.
We're talking to God Sham God. I want to pick that up and see if I can clear up that line. This is too good. This conversation is way too good. As I mentioned, a New York legend, a basketball legend, played at LaSalle Academy, played his college ball at Providence College. He is currently a Dallas Mavericks assistant, and he literally is a global icon for his impact on the game, the way he teaches the game, the way people emulate his game, his legendary handle. There really is nobody quite like him, and I want to make sure we go back there. God, sorry about that. I want to make sure we had a good, clean line. But you were talking about coming up in New York. Let me ask you one thing also. I mean, when we mentioned LaSalle, that was an era when, as you point out, New York ran everything, and New York players always did it. You and Ron Artest, in fact, were teammates at LaSalle. What were those days like?
I mean, it was good because, like, when Ron first got there, you know, I was All-American and things like that. And he was up and coming, and he used to, you know, battle every day to get better and better. So then he became like a little brother to me. And, you know, once I, you know, my senior year, we was like 29-1. And then, you know, it was like me passing the torch to him. And then the next year, you know, they went undefeated, won the states and things like that. And Ron's always been like the same player he is now. Like, he's always been hard-nosed, tough defense, and just raw talent and things like that. So, like I said, coming up in New York, everything is like ultra competitive. And then one time we played the AAU tournament in Rhode Island right before I went to Providence. And we played against Kobe Bryant and Tim Thomas and them. And this is Ron Artest first started coming alive. And he was like, no, I want to guard Kobe. I want to guard this person. So my name could be mentioned in these rankings and stuff like that. And that's just the New York side of us.
God, Sham God joining us. Great story. I want to go back to Kobe in a minute, but when you mentioned that you were a high school All-American, a McDonald's All-American, your high school coach had asked you where you wanted to be, and you said just that. I want to be a McDonald's All-American, and then you go on your grind and you work at it. You were named a McDonald's All-American, and you played in that legendary 1995 game. That game included Marbury, Vince Carter, Ron Mercer, Sharif Abdur-Rahim, Anton Jameson, Kevin Garnett, Paul Pierce, Chauncey Billups, Tractor Trailer. I mean, dude, that is crazy. What do you remember about that game?
I remember that we were so close. You know, even and to this day, I think we had the best McDonald's All-American class ever because everybody before they became junior year in college, they all was drafted in the NBA. And I remember, you know, like I said, we from New York, and at that time, like you said, New York ran everything, and we were trendsetters. And I remember I wanted to get my ears pierced, and I went and got my ears pierced, and a whole McDonald's All-American team came with me and got their ears pierced. So if you look at the McDonald's game, you'll see all of us with Band-Aids on our ear.
Wow.
Because we all went and got our ears pierced. And the thing about that class is just how close we was, because Kevin Garnett used to come to New York and stay with me and Stephon Marbury in the summer, and Chauncey Billups. And if you look at it today, we're all close friends now and things like that.
Guy Chamgod joining us. All right, so you mentioned Kobe. Right around that time, you were asked to teach ball handling to somebody. We'll talk about your handle in a minute. But that person that you were supposed to work with was Kobe Bryant, who was at Lower Merion. What do you remember about his game at that time? What did you teach him?
I remember, like, when I first met him, I just thought he was just a nut, that he would never pass the ball. And, you know, I was like, man, like, you know, because it was funny, because when he first came to the camp, everybody's like, man, who does God think he's Michael Jordan, man? Who the hell do you think he is? He needs to pass the ball and stuff like that. Because he walked like Michael Jordan, talked like Michael Jordan, did everything like Michael Jordan did. So, and his father coached at LaSalle. And I remember I was like, you know, you being young, you don't know. I'm like, man, it'd be cool for me to go to LaSalle High School and LaSalle College, you know. And then when I met his father coached us, so man, we became close. And then he was like, yeah, you know, my son, he's doing all this stuff. He's like, can you teach him how to dribble? And, you know, at that point, I'm still saying in the back of my mind, because I'm like this big fish, and I'm like, man, he don't even pass the ball. I'm like, I don't know. So then I'm just saying anything. I'm like, well, I'll be there like 6 o'clock in the morning. If he want to come work out, he can come work out. But it's me thinking he's not going to come. And then, of course, he shows up, and then we just built our own friendship. And, like, of course, I didn't know he was going to become Kobe Bryant. I knew he'd become great, but not Kobe Bryant. And it's funny because, like, I would never, like, even growing up, I would never tell that story. And then, like, right before he retired, he was telling the Boston Journal. He was like, because I went to the game when I was coaching at Providence. And he was like, oh, man, this is the guy that taught me how to dribble. This is the guy that taught me how to dribble. And it just, you know, it just went from there. And it just, you know, became a life of its own.
Dude, lots of guys learned lots of things from you. God Shamgod is my guest. And then you got my guy, Jamal Crawford, one of my favorites. He said, quote, a God Shamgod type handle is an elite handle. It's one of the best handles that's ever touched a basketball, end quote. So where did the handle come from? Obviously, you really worked hard at it. But how much of that is just a natural gift?
I think it's hard work, need preparation, and then it just all comes together because there was a point in my life I couldn't dribble, and that's what made me obsessed. Like, when I was in junior high school, I met Tiny Archibald, and I didn't even know who he was. And he was, like, telling me how to play, and I was like, man, who is this old guy telling me how to play? Like, he played basketball.
Tiny Archibald.
Yeah, so then I went home, and I'm watching Below the Rim, and they got, like, Jason Kidd, Magic Johnson. But in the middle of the tape, it shows, like, the old time, so it shows Pete Maravich. And, of course, it shows Tiny Archibald. And I'm like, this can't be the guy that works at my school. Because, you know, when you're young, even now, you know, it's not when you're young, but even now, like, people think when you make it to the NBA, you're automatically rich. So you're not going to see somebody working in a hospital if they played the NBA. So I'm going to school. You know, he's our gym teacher and our school coach. So I'm like, there's no way he's a Hall of Fame person. He's working in my school. And when I went back, I'm like, why didn't you tell me you played in there? He's like, oh, you young kids think you know everything. And then he sat me down, he told me, he was like, if you know how to dribble and run a team, you will always be worth something to a team. And I just took it to heart. And every day I used to dribble like 4 hours, 6 hours a day and then go play and practice the moves that I was working on. I used to practice the move in slow motion. I used to get 1 pound ankle weights and put it on my wrist and just dribble and things like that. And then what happened was I used to watch video so much that I started watching it in slow motion just so I could see people's footwork and things like that. And then I had these real long arms and stuff like that. So I just put everything into me and then it came out the way it came out.
God Shamgod joining us. You know, and then there's the move itself, the Shamgod. The move is so iconic, it's been named after you. Damian Lillard talks about how he used to study it and how different it is from every other move that's out there. But legend has it that the Shamgod first came about by an accident. Dude, is that true?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was, like I said, I used to always watch film. So when I played the game against a guy named Tyson Wheeler, and he had did something similar. So I was trying to master that at first. I was trying to master that. So when I played in the Big East tournament, we played against Rutgers, and I tried to emulate what I had saw like a week ago, but I had totally messed it up. And then when I messed it up, I was watching film, and I'm like, well, me and my friend Corey Wright, one of my best friends, he's a point guard in Providence College. I'm like, man, this move right here could work too. I'm like, I know I messed up, but it looked like it could be. And then the move that I messed up, I went and practiced every night, every day against Corey Wright. He used to guard me. And I did the move over and over and over and over again. I didn't think it was going to become what it is today. And then one day I woke up and everybody's like, oh, I'm doing the Shamgar move, the Shamgar move. And I'm like, what is people talking about? Like, because I did so many dribbling moves in my life. Like when I played the five-star, I went to five-star All-American camp when I got MVP, and Howard, the late Howard Garfinkel, rest in peace, was like, oh, this is the best dribbler of the 20th century. You know, he said that on TV. So it was so many dribbling moves I've done, but I never knew what move they was talking about. And then I guess because of the NCAA, and it was just on primetime TV, you know, everybody just took it and ran with it, and then it just took over life of its own. You know, to this day, I'm just so humbled by it because, you know, I played in the NBA for 20 games and I'm just as famous as people that played 20 years and things like that. And it's like my whole life, people have always asked me to show them how to dribble, you know, from Chris Webber to me and Shaq, me and Chris Paul, and Chris Paul saying, you know, he looked up to me growing up and things like that. Those moments are so humbling for me.
Guy Shamgar joining us. I want to point out what you just said. You played 20 games in the NBA, but to your point, you're more well-known than some guys who played 20 years. In fact, it's international. I mean, Kyrie called it, quote, dangerous. Crawford called it wicked. Because you went global and you played overseas, everybody there saw the move too. So what's it like? Yeah. It's not just an NBA thing or a domestic thing. What's it like for you to see players worldwide dropping that move?
Man, I just think it's, like I said, I think it's amazing, you know, and I think it's something that I could have never dreamed of, you know, and that goes back to what you were saying about God-given talent and stuff like that. You know, all the blessings and all the accolades, you know, all the stuff I get from people is totally from God and things like that, because, like, I would never think me going to these other countries and then them seeing me dribble and things like that. You know, I've been in Dubai and I had, tell me, I only started liking basketball because you was over here playing. Like, I used to love soccer, but until I saw you play and saw you dribble the basketball, you made me like basketball. And, you know, for me, that stuff like that is a blessing when I see people from other sports or people send me film of people doing the move, but in other sports. Like, and I'm like how can people even think of stuff like that? And, you know, for them to put it back to me is just an amazing feeling. And that means I did something right, you know, growing up and things like that. So I'm just humbled by it, and I'm just, you know, overwhelmed.
Yeah, you did. One last thought. You're with the Mavericks as an assistant now, and you focus on ball handling. What's it like to work with Luka? And when you watch him play, how bright is his future?
You know, I just think Luka's an amazing, amazing player. You know, of course, I know, I see he studies, you know, basketball from here. And just working on, you know, just working on dribbling with him, Jalen Brunson, you know, when Dennis Smith Jr. was there, Harrison Barnes and West. It's just an honor to work with these people. Even one time, you know, worked on the Shamgar with Dirk, you know, a living legend and things like that. You know, those feelings and those memories I will always have in my heart. And, you know, like I said, just for them to even let me help them, you know, whether it's Chris Dunn, whether it's me working with Isaiah Thomas, like Kobe Bryant, you know, different people and things like that. Just for them to even listen to me and want to hear my story and want to, you know, do things that I've done in my career, it just shows me, like I said, like I've done something right, and I'm just humbled by it.
You got one last thought. You know, we talked about New York City ball players, New York City guards, and then you mentioned, like, Jason Kidd. I talked to Gary Payton not long ago, and we talked about the kind of brand of basketball they played in Oakland, like Gary Payton, Brian Shaw, Jason Kidd, J.R. Ryder, Damian Lillard. How does that Oakland, like, where do you come out on the Oakland style? Is that a different style? Can you, when you look at it, can you see it and know where those guys were and where they played?
Yeah, it's like, you know, like I said, I studied dribbling so much, so I can tell when somebody's from, whether they're from D.C., whether they're from Oakland, you know, whether they're from Chicago and things like that, because New York style is so different, because New York style always come with a flair. You know, it always come with, you know, growing up in New York, you always seen, you know, Jay-Z, Sean Combs and things like that. So you always seen people of high caliber doing, you know, things. You always saw fashion. You always saw style. So when you play basketball, that's what you imitated. You always wanted the crowd to be a part of it and things like that. When you see players like from Oakland, you know, they're hard-nosed, they straight to it, they get buckets, they're great players. When you see people from D.C., you know, they got a lot of stutter step crossovers, a lot of bouncing around on their toes and things like that. If you watch people from Chicago, when I was growing up, I watched Tim Hardaway, Isaiah Thomas. If you watch the way they dribble in the box. So they dribble close to their body so everything can come directly up into the shot. If you watch people from New York, every you know, since I came out, like, you know, my crossover is wide and things like that. And then, you know, trickle down to, you know, AI, where AI crossover is wide, you know, wide open and things like that and not close to the body. And that's where that flare and stuff comes in from.
That's why he's a New York legend, a basketball legend. I'm glad you mentioned Tim Hardaway. God, I used to love watching Tim Hardaway play.
Mm-hmm.
LaSalle Academy, Providence College. He is an assistant with the Dallas Mavericks. God, Sham God, my guest. I could do that for another hour. God, I appreciate you very much. That was so fun. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, I appreciate you. And like I said, I'm just humbled. Like, come on, I'm on the wrong show. Like, come on, man. What could be better than that, man?
Come on, man. I'm talking to God, Sham God. It's so good, bro. Appreciate you, man. Thank you so much. Talk soon. God, that was awesome. And I went way over, and I don't care. That was awesome. God, Sham God, if you need him. I could have done that another hour. That was so fun. All right. Short time out. Time for a sports update. Sorry, not sorry that I'm so late. You got to agree, right? I did not want that conversation with God, Sham God to end. This email says, War God, Sham God. War 90s point guards. No better handles on the planet than God Almighty. For sure. 90s point guards. Alvy and I. And Alvy was a great high school point guard. We were just reminiscing about some of the best of the 90s. 90s point guards. At Sneakers to Suits tweets, the God Sham God convo on Jim Rome is captivating. East Bay Troy. Real Dub fans love Hardaway and Run TMC days. Man, Timmy Hardaway was so incredible. In his prime, he was absolutely amazing. I loved him. One of my favorites ever. Denlesks tweets, God Sham God, had some good moves, but you should have seen me mop up the court in my heyday. Signed, Vince ShamWow.
Are you following me, camera guy?
Let's go to the ATP. Ask the Pros, brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Think O'Reilly Auto Parts for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices. Excellent customer service at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Better parts, better prices every day. Trish in PA tweets or asks, your last ATP, you answered the question of how you named the show The Jungle. But how did you decide on the name The Clones? War Lady Clones. Trish in PA. Trish, I don't know who first said that, but the way that came to be is pretty simple. When I came on, I had kind of a distinct style, for better or for worse, and people would call up and just kind of mimic me. And not in a way of disrespect. They liked what they heard, and they just started to sound like me, and they were saying things like I was saying. And then derisively, somebody said, man, they're all a bunch of clones. This guy's got like a nation of clones. They all sound like him. They all act like him. They all talk like him. Clones. So just generically, they became the clones. Alvy. Are you ready to roll it? Hit it.
Oh my God, I can't do it. I'm too tired.
Welcome to the jungle. My name is Jim Rome. A very good Monday to you. Hope you had an outstanding weekend. I say the same thing every Monday because I believe that. I've got a good show for you. Let's get right at it. It is now officially over. Antonio Brown is finally out of Pittsburgh.
Pittsburgh! Yeah!
Antonio Brown won that trade. He did what almost no NFL player ever does. He won. He got over. Tip of the hat, Mr. Big Chest. Will Brinson joining us. You know, when you look at this deal right now, is there any way to say that Antonio Brown did not completely get over on the Steelers?
He stuffed Pittsburgh and the Steelers in a locker, Jim. I mean, this is an unbelievable power play.
I don't know. I got kind of a soft spot, strangely enough, for Jose.
There will be no more baseball left of the drug test.
Did you ever cheat on J-Lo?
No.
Would you ever cheat on J-Lo?
No.
Do you call her bae? No. Does she call you boo?
No.
Why am I on Yahoo? Charles Omenihu.
Definitely. This is number one on my list to get on the show with you. I watched you a lot when I was little. When you're on ESPN, definitely a treat for me.
The old man still has some heat, right?
Yeah, nah, you still got it. You definitely still got it.
You and your wife.
Buying a ticket does not give you license to say or do whatever you want. There is still a line. Racist garbage is not on the line. Racist garbage is over the line.
Email.
This email says, hey, Jim, we're glad that we weren't the ones at the OKC Utah game with Shane Monday night. Regards, Shane's Tuesday through Sunday wives.
I'm actually a professional magician. And I would love to come by the show one day and show you something cool.
In a word, no. I can't think of a worse idea than running a magician through here. I mean, why don't we just turn this whole thing into the Del Mar Fair? How about I just sit in a dunk tank and you can throw tennis balls at me? How about I ride around in circles in the studio on a unicycle? Next segment, I'm going to march an elephant in here and then walk on a tightrope. I think you were a little harsh on Shane. Try and understand. Try and understand. Try and understand. He's a magic man. Don't mess with Hart. You know I love the Wilsons. You know I love Hart.
Email.
No trays off.
It's already been addressed.
No trays. Off.
We're getting ready for Cincinnati.
The foodie. The Browns are killing it, and the Giants are killing themselves. That's what bad teams do. And that's what the Giants are right now, a bad team.
Jim, those people put Elpo on ramen noodles, and they call it a gourmet fish.
Everywhere you look, everywhere you go, there's a scam. There's a school to fake your way into. I don't want your life.
One kid was a basketball player. Like, it won, like, the Hong Kong Cup, but nobody was checking. They just got away with it. And Lori Loughlin spent $500,000 to get her two kids into USC.
Sell the team!
Email
that coke and those hookers set me up in that hotel room too. Signed, Mayor Marion Barry. No need for anybody to come in here and say, "quote bitch set me up." He's gonna get me in trouble. Brandon Tierney, my guest.
Jimmy, thanks for having me on, brother. It's an honor, and a big fan for a long time. You don't look old, but you're a pioneer, brother. So you keep doing your thing, man.
Much respect, Brandon. Game respecting game. I appreciate you very much. Brad Trey Living is my guest.
You get close to him, Jim. They stink like hell, dude. I mean, these are awful, awful creatures.
You pig.
Tell me if you saw those in the middle of the night that you wouldn't be taken off to run into a guy's garage.
I want to war Brad Tree Living saving the energy he uses chasing pigs so he can use it to run from all the fat chicks at the Calgary Stampede.
Come on, man. Get your head out of your ass.
That's enough for Tom Cruise to walk right up to him and give him the double nostril afterburner. Tyler, you stink.
Eric Weddle.
Rome, my man. Great to be back. Great to be back on the show. And shoot, back home, man. It's pretty exciting for me and the family.
Featured in Marlin Magazine. I don't fish on boats, okay, Matt? I fish on a boat.
Let me tell you something, Matt. I don't fish on boats, bro. I fish on a boat. Yeah, that's what I thought. And a right hand! Because there's nothing cautious about how he played last night. This guy knows only one speed, Zion speed.
Duke is Duke.
Jimmy Johnson, my guest. Your first full marathon.
I'm excited. I'm also exhausted, and I'm at like 80 miles a week right now. I'm cooked.
I'm fresh. I'm ready to go.
Hawk is eating way too much pie as he's training for the big race, but this engine won't lie.
It smelled like anal gland discharge.
And it's going to be called Leaving a San Antonio Locker Room, starring Larry Brown's crank.
Very little moose knuckle slammed in between.
Like Forrest Gump's mom did by fanging the principal.
Bad calls beget other worse calls. God, Sham God.
Like, come on, I'm on the wrong show. Like, come on, man. We could be better than that.
Appreciate you, man. Right. Thank you so much. God, that was awesome. Pie day.
Always a pleasure to join you guys.
Come on, go Racers.
Sun's out. Guns out. Bill Buttercups. Bill Belichick.
What's your take on it, buddy?
Thank you. Goodbye.
Sincerely.
Take care. Good night now.
Good job, Alvy. Tomorrow, do not miss the biggest pay-per-view fight of the year. Errol the Truth Spence Jr. taking on Mikey Garcia for the World Welterweight Championship. It's live from AT&T Stadium. Spence Jr. versus Garcia. Tomorrow at 9 Eastern, 6 Pacific, live on pay-per-view. Order it right now. My thanks to God Sham God, Fletcher McGee from Wofford, Jimmy Johnson, the driver of the number 48, the XR4TI crew. Y'all have a great weekend. Nice to have you. See you clones right back here on Monday. We're out.